Welcome, everyone. I am Tennyson Wolfe. This is a human-to-human podcast, a little something that I created so that I could be in some conversations with friends and people that I care about to just be in some space of some thinking out loud, some wandering out loud, some sharing stories out loud, sharing questions out loud. There is a certain art to being human beings with one another that I know I feel in my heart. And that I wish to continue to engage with people that that I know and get to sometimes play with and sometimes work with. So today's episode, I get to bring in a particular friend, and I'm going to say a few words about him just to love him up. This is Lawrence Kemp, who is currently in Croatia, and yet I know from living stateside and in particular meeting in Colorado with a couple of work-related things. I know Lawrence as a dear friend, as a dear brother. These are some of the things that I would say about you, Lawrence. I'm going to welcome your voice in just a second. I know you as a dear friend. I know you as someone who moves my heart when I am trying to be the good Tennyson or the best Tennyson that I can be. There is something about our connection, which sometimes has been work and sometimes has been wander and sometimes has been tea and sometimes has been sitting quietly together. All of that seems to feed the deeper instincts I have about who I wish to be in the world and some of the folks that I wish to be with. That's a little bit of love to start things off. I'm so glad that you've joined and welcomed in here today into this little conversation that we dare to record and play out loud with. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, Tennyson. Wow, a little bit of love, huh? I'm deeply grateful for being someone that shines a little light on the higher Tennyson and, what your comment on the art of being human. Ooh, plop.
Yeah.
I think that's something that all of us are really, we'll say, encountering these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both in our hits and our misses.
Yeah.
It's not entirely clear which is which.
Well, we have a shared connection. And as you know, my intention is to wander a bit together. So it is conversational, and yet it's also got some light circle in it. Converse circle-y is the word that I keep playing with in a playful way. So we'll do some of that. But when you mentioned the art of humans being or the art of human being, that takes us back to a common friend here too, Judy Wallace. Is someone that for a while when she was living out in Massachusetts there, she and I and some others hooked up kind of with a beginning that is the art of hosting body of work. But we wanted something that was, you know, just dove into the deeply human aspects of things. And we created a gathering, titled it called The Art of Humans Being. And we got to host two of those. And funny, you know, I just referenced that with a person the other day, yesterday, on a call, trying to, you know, live this deeper aspect of, well, it calls to me. I'm so interested in just being a good human, a better human, a good human with other good humans, or, you know, creating spaces that bring out some of what is real, deep, meaningful, thoughtful caring with one another. And the person I was talking to yesterday just said, oh gosh, you know, that nails it. And I guess it's one of the ways that I connect with you, Lawrence. I feel like you and I hold a thread together of a thread of interest, and maybe it's passion, maybe it's commitment to explore the realm of being, the realm and the artistry of being thoughtful, kind, caring humans. Oh my gosh, we could get big here today.
We could get big. We could get very big. I have tea.
There you go. I have tea with me today too.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Wow, Judy Wallace. I haven't spoken with her in some time. You know, the art of human. The arcs are sparking here. You know, Joseph Campbell published a book called The Art of Being Human, which was kind of a distilled compendium of his verbal deliveries from a month-long workshop immersion he did towards the end of his life. So it's like a late model Joseph Campbell mature. Wow. It's like Elvis with the big suit years, you know, as he was fully in the throes of his art. And that left a big impression on me, you know, various times as I've read it over the years. I finally gave my well dog-eared copy to somebody that was dear to me at the time. And, you know, one of the things that I'm noticing popping up increasingly as I kind of gum around on this experience of being human is, you know, it can have a pejorative kind of flavor to it. Only human, merely human. But, you know, I don't see it that way. I mean, obviously there are those aspects of ourselves clearly because, you know, they're being displayed quite proudly in the media these days. But for me, the being human part is being fully human. And I mean, you may call that a transcendent kind of quality or heroic kind of quality, you know, whatever. You can frame it in any way you want. But to me, it is the higher and the better. It is the aspirational quality. And that's one of the things I deeply appreciate about you, my brother, is you also remind me of those quietly and almost perfunctorily remind me of those aspirational qualities of humanity. And that's something that I really treasure. It's even poetic, one might say.
Nice going. Hey, Lawrence. How is it that you, as the person that you are, came to have such interest or commitment or passion or whatever it is in this, quote, simple notion of full humanness, being humanness? Like, I imagine you had some things along the way when you were in your 20s or when you were in your 40s that sort of grew that in you, yeah?
Yeah, boy. And we'll have to make choices to distill this.
Okay.
But I think a lot of it can be traced back to a particular moment I had when I was in my teens. I was 19. Mm-hmm. And it was a classic spiritual awakening experience. You know, column of white light, the whole bit. I can still experience it as I did in that moment right now. It's never left. And it happened to be in a theater. It was a moment of transcendent transmission, spontaneous awakening in a theater, actually the Alabama Shakespeare Theater, and it was a production of Christmas Carol of all things, but that sparked something for me and something about an awakening into a fuller humanity and an understanding that that's an aspirational quality and not a reductive one. And it started a long journey in many, many laps and many, many, many rivers that for a long time took me through theater. You know, I thought because it happened in the theater that I needed to stay in theater in order to honor that and pursue that thread. So for a whole bunch of years, I was a theater consultant. I developed theater, I developed performing arts work and festivals, and in particular architecture. I did a lot of design consulting for people like Cirque du Soleil and so forth. And and that was an extraordinary experience in providing a container for transformation for others in the way that I had experienced one. But then after a while, I discovered that it was actually more about the humanity itself rather than the container that held it. So once I got that, it actually got a lot easier because buildings are kind of a pain in the ass and they're expensive and they're very, very stressful. Mm-hmm. So it allowed me to kind of release my death grip on the theater and in particular the architecture projects and just be with that human experience, which has taken my work and my focus and some more enjoyable and meandering and mm-hmm. high quality paths.
I love it. Enjoyable meandering. Yep, that touches my heart. Mm-hmm. The general notion of transformational experience. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I have something similar, almost quirky. from me in my late teens there, 19. It's kind of interesting to think of. I'll share a little bit more of the detail of it, but you know, I think I was a kid, a young man that suspected, I didn't have the language for it then. I have more language for it now, but I think I kind of just inherently suspected there's more going on here in this world, this life, this experience. And, you know, I had everything from angst about that to such a deep hunger. And when I fast forward, I feel like that it turns out that that's been a guiding impression for me in so many ways. I still think, you know, I am a person who needs to find some kind of simple story or value, or I do well when I can find a simple value or story that's true or real enough, you know. And one of those is, you know, I think there's more going on than we see, or there's more unseen than seen. For me, that took me into some hunger. Back in the day, university, I live in Edmonton, mm-hmm. Alberta at that time, and I'm a university student trying to figure out what my school path is, and not knowing that, you know, I was a drifting student. But in one of those like super stereotypical awakening ways, I'm almost like a little embarrassed by it now, but it was a significant thing. I saw a brochure on back in the pre-digital days, I saw a brochure on the bulletin board that said it had some meaning of life questions, and it was a church group, you know, it was a faith community group. And it was kind of asking like, where'd you come from and where are you going to, you know? And I realized those are like really stereotypical questions in that realm. But something in me said, I want to go. And I think I didn't tell my friends, you know, I had some buddies that I was in college with there, and we were pretty close with one another. But something in me said, oh, no, I think I'm going to go do this on my own. And I went, and, you know, it wasn't some grand epiphany there, as in, well, now I am with this group kind of thing. But even the very invitation to open up to something beyond, it was right timing. I needed it. And the music was playing. I think it's the Kansas song. I think Kansas is the band. It's called Dust in the Wind, right? I mean, it's as stereotypical as it gets. But something in me was so hungry for that. And, you know, in a way I look back, I went and it was a private experience, or, you know, me not with my friends and with these other people. But I think that actually seeded more of my opening aspirational desires, that, you know, now I live here 40 years later, and I'm still, oh gosh, in some way seeking, and in some way creating. Like when you go back to the theater and say, I wanted to help create some of those experiences or moments for people, it, you know, something grew in me from way back then with such a silly thing that brought me into, oh gosh, what if we could even create more forms, or my life could in some way be an invitation or an offering to see what is beyond the scene. Oh, that, you know, I can just bring that so back to the, you know, the world of Tennyson and the world of facilitation that I get to do. Ooh, I'll stop there. Let me pause.
Actually, I'm not going to let you. I'm curious. I hear you, and I see that unfolding, and I'm curious what you would say if I asked, is this something that you very consciously, intentionally carry in your work and facilitation? And I ask this because I'm somebody who has participated in your container as both a receiver and as a peer and as a collaborator. So yeah. I'm curious, like, you know, do you consciously, intentionally bring this with you?
Yeah. So I want to, I love, no, it's a clear answer. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then the backing up from that is, you know, I try to do my best. Or sometimes that's what it sounds like, right? I don't know what arc to name here, you know, in the last, it's like, it's in some way, I know this is true in the last 20 years, the body of work for me in facilitation. That's part of where you and I met. I know, see, I'm trying to find it from my belly here. Mm-hmm. It's not just about tools. Mm-hmm. Like, people use that language all the time, and I think that just becomes a placeholder so that people can even find their own narrative for being at a workshop or being at a retreat. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's never been about methodology or tools in the hard definition way. But if we, you know, use, for example, circle is one of the ones that's big for me, the circle way, that circle as a methodology is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But circle, like, that's a doing. But then there's the circle that is being, or a way of being, right? So my hunger has, I think, I guess I'm claiming it now, has always been oriented in some way towards the deep being of things. And sometimes our entry, our doorway in, is some of the doing, right? But, oh, the deliberate caring, you know, that goes back to the Judy Wallace, you know, makes me smile to think of her. It goes back to the Judy Wallace and said, what are we going to call this thing? I don't know. How about the art of humans being, you know? That is not a methodological orientation. And that's a pretty good filter from the get-go of who's going to be interested in showing up for such a thing, right?
Right.
It's pretty darn deliberate. And I get everything from, I'd like to think centered and grounded in all of that, all the way over to, like, you know, evangelistic or over-trying sometimes, you know, some of that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you relate to that?
Well, I appreciate your, not just the candid response and the claiming of it, but also the meandering through it and the actually paying attention and unpacking it a little bit, because we get caught up in the hustle and bustle of living our lives and showing up with our truth or bullshit or whatever it is that we're showing up with. And sometimes we neglect a little of the self-reflection, and in particular, the witness, the being witnessed self-reflection. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I asked you is because I experienced that very much with you. Like, it's not tool oriented. It's not operational. It's a potential that you hold. This is an embodied thing. This is not about skills and practice and tools and all of that. This is achievements or certifications or anything. Like, you have had the experience. It has shaped you, and you hold that possibility for others. You don't have to say anything about it, and you don't have a particular way you format it necessarily. Mm-hmm. You have a couple of traditions that inform, you know, our circle away and art of hosting are the two we often talk about. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I really appreciate about being in a space with you is, like, it's in the space that possibility is available, and that possibility is can be recognized, and it is honored. And for me personally, it sounded like you came to it fairly quickly. For me personally, I had to fight myself for years before I would allow myself to have the experience, because I was not mentally or emotionally or culturally predisposed towards that sort of thing, even though I had such a deep encounter with it. It took me a long time to talk myself into having it.
That's good.
And, I was a little reactionary when I was young, but that to me is, you know, that embodied beingness, that recognition is what matters most. And I kind of don't care where it comes from. I mean, maybe this can show up at a meeting in an architect's office or a banker's office or in traffic or, you know, certainly the opportunities for it to show up in the kinds of meetings that we host, mm-hmm. and the kind of encounters we host are legion. Mm-hmm. It's that, to me, that is much more of a service to the transmission than necessarily building a better building. But you got to start somewhere. Yeah. Like you said, you know, a lot of times the tool is the entry point. For me, it was architecture.
Right. Well, I like that phrase, service to the transmission. And, you know, maybe I imagine this to be true in some shared ways between you and I, and maybe in some different ways also. When you use language like that, service to the transmission, like that's one of the things, Lawrence, that I feel like maybe this is the part for me that didn't come quickly also. Like, you know, that sort of awareness or that sort of centering or grounding for me has been a pretty loopy, circular, you try something, it comes back, you try something, you forget about it, it comes back. And, you know, sometimes it's in the simplest of words. So I'm curious what this is for you. I'll offer my version of it. What's the question here? I'm curious how you experience being, my words would be, a translator that can invite such possibility. So if I want to use the language of service to the transmission, what you just spoke, what's pretty common for me is like there's a vibrational reality here. We're looking for a resonance here. You know, it's some of that, of a vibrational quality. I find that when I'm with people, and sometimes this means groups, teams, consulting, you know, gigs, sometimes events, sometimes gatherings, I find myself speaking in this reductive simplicity way that I think serves. So I'll say things like, well, on the one hand, I think we're trying to improve the quality of our meetings, you know. I think we're trying to be a more capable team or a more celebratory team together. There's lots of things to speak in there, right? Mm-hmm. And the truth-telling part for me, this is the translating part, is to say, and on the other hand, reductively, on the other hand, maybe what we're trying to do is change the fundamental feeling or vibrational reality of who we are with one another. And some of that is just like an invitation to come in, to, you know, to dare to feel that. Actually, it's you can think it. That's great. You know, our brains are pretty yummy things, but dare to feel it, or dare to welcome the more invisible realms of an intuition, for example, and a shared intuition. Ooh, my gosh, you know, that's pretty big stuff. Let me pause. How do you relate to all of that, Mr. Lawrence?
I'm gonna resist the urge to lob it back at you, and I'm gonna actually take it as a serve. And there's something about the translation that's really speaking to me today in particular, because I'm composing the final material for a series of programs that I'm launching tomorrow, which is effectively the culmination of 30 years of practice and research and experimentation. And it's kind of the first gestalt of my work coming through. Mm. I wouldn't say precarious, but it is definitely a vulnerable position in the moment. But translation, but also transformation. To me, translation is something that we do consciously. It's an egoic process. And I'm not using ego here in a pejorative sense in any way. I think it's a crucial aspect of who we are. In particular, if we cultivate it so that it can hold something larger with some grace and some restraint. But translation is something that we do. Mm-hmm. And our skillful means can vary, and it takes courage, especially because sometimes, you know, we're hosting meetings or encounters with people who have potentially very disparate belief systems, and some of them can be very rational. So how do we bring in this like shared intuitive experience into a very, very rational room? Mm. It can be a very real challenge. So translation, there can be an expression of skillful means. It takes courage, but then there's also transformation or transmission or transubstantiation or something deeper. I don't know what you want to call it. This kind of gets back to this sort of audio engineer part of my brain. You know, a transformer is a device. You feed in one signal or one voltage, and something else comes out the other end. And it's not a choice. The transformer does not say, I'm going to choose how to do this. You know, maybe you can program it, whatever. Well, you're going to getting into splitting hairs there, but there's a quality at which that which we are embodied as changes what comes in into what goes out. And we have a choice there of whether or not to express it. But it's less about the nature of the signal and more about whether or not to share it. So there's another level of courage there, but it's also another level of signal. So I guess what I'm saying is we're kind of both. And maybe part of the game is playing around a little bit with whatever we feel is the situation is served by.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a little bit of calling ourselves out and what we feel up to in the moment. Certainly what I'm finding out for myself in particular recently as I develop these programs is it kind of doesn't matter how far I lean into the transmission side and that raw courage that's required on the transmission side, it still feels like there's more needed and more being called out.
Mm-hmm. That's good stuff, Lawrence. Raw courage. I guess I have a
foolishness.
Sure, and needed, right? Like that's a quality that I want to encourage in myself and others. And even if it's just got a little boundary, let's be foolish for a while. We might discover something.
Ooh, yeah.
Like I'm talking to myself probably quite a bit on that one because I love to be so serious, you know.
So good, brother.
Hey, so lots to follow in all of that. There is a part of me that goes to, this is the part of me, I think, that keeps seeking words, but it's not brain stuff for me. Like it's really belly stuff for me. An image for me is I feel like I'm trying to like grab something out of the air that matches what we're trying to talk about here, or what we're resonating about here, some of that. So the being changes the doing. That's part of it for me, and I think that's the hunger for me of, you know, trying to find what's a one-liner that might encourage this disparate, maybe sometimes desperate too, group of people into something, you know, a little beyond the scene, beyond the known. Hey, you're launching, or well, let's see, you could use some different language, but your programs, wow, look at that. And bringing them together. And this is a culmination or something. I'm not sure what word you use there. Can you say a little bit, what are these programs that you are reconfiguring or replacing, or what's happening?
I can say a lot. I don't know how much will make sense just yet because it's literally like all so much in my brain right now. It's all I've been doing this week for the most part. But essentially it's, hosting a learning community, a deep learning community, but not just a learning community of conscious information, but a learning community of the field, as not just perceiving the field, but understanding ourselves as an expression of the field. And this is for transformational practitioners in particular. Mm-hmm. This is for people whose devotion is to being the change and to helping the world navigate this evolution that it's navigating currently. And that can take a lot of forms. You know, there's a lot of people involved that are energy medicine practitioners, they're teachers, they're therapists, you know, they're social entrepreneurs, visionaries, artists. You know, there's a lot of different roles that can host that kind of an intention. But what it comes down to is people who relate to the living field as a fundamental expression of reality and participate in it and understand themselves. So maybe this is getting back a little bit to that translation and transmission notion too. The translation is more the individual expression, and it's a will oriented, it's an egoic expression. But at the same time, I think it's important that we we cultivate our capacity to embody yes and, that we can do that and we can drive the bus and we can pay the taxes and all of that sort of stuff and have these conversations. But at the same time, we can also recognize that we are something larger and deeper that is an expression of this larger field. And when we come together in a group and we research it in an intentional manner, and we cultivate our capacity to plumb these depths, like, amazing things can happen. I've been doing a bunch of support work with the Hague Center for Transformation and Innovation in the Netherlands, in particular their field studies group, which is doing a lot of collective constellation work. That's the instrument that they use, is collective constellations. And it's really informed my research and my energy medicine practice and my meditation practice of understanding what can happen when a group of people have a question, mm-hmm. and come together intentionally organizing themselves, self-organizing in a collective way, in a field-centric way, and clarifying the field of this inquiry and the field of the circle, of the collection, of the group, so that deeper and larger information can emerge, which is informative. It's instructive. It helps us grow and helps us realize more deeply our humanness. But it is also healing on a very visceral level. Connection, phenomenology, is like, the connection is healing. Community is magnifying. So it's, I call it a deep learning community. There's a lot more layers to it than that.
There's a few more layers that go with that. No kidding.
But simply put, that's what it is.
Right. But you have to find something, right, that names it in a way that like invites dwelling or landing on it for a moment, as opposed to, what the hell is he even talking about? You know, that's some of it. And then I imagine also, I mean, this is what I relate to. There's some people who aren't trying to figure it out that way. Their belly tells them, or their heart, or their being tells them yes, and they go, oh gosh, that's good, right? Like, I think I aspire to that kind of clarity/courage also, right?
Yeah, and I get lots of people that find me that way, and that there are other people also that have a more reasoned approach. They relate to reality differently, and the diversity of the ecosystem is important. We need all different kinds of people, not just the gut intuitive ones that already have the courage. We need others that are struggling with the courage, or struggling with the intuition, or think they are. Or in my case, was struggling with the notion of the validity of a spiritual experience at all. And it took me, you know, 10 or 15 years to realize I'd already had one.
Yeah. Okay. So I can feel the part of me that's got 29 hour-long questions now to engage in. And I'm not surprised by that, Lawrence. That's kind of how we go or roll, or that's how I experience how we roll. I am going to try a couple. I'm staying with your programs here and the moment of timing that, hey, tomorrow's a thing of significance. I imagine that you have the energy of creation, meaning Lawrence has got a thing he's going to do, and you feel the excitement and passion and purpose of it. I also imagine that there is this intertwined part of you that is being created, like the creation calls to you and lives in you, and you host it for a while. Do you relate to that as a concept?
Just a little.
Yeah.
I have this, it reminds me of one of my favorite sayings, creation creates the creator. Mm. And that's very much what I'm experiencing right now. I am being formed by the choice to express this vision and to express and to respond to a need, quite frankly. It's just simply put, you know, throughout the course of my work, both as a consultant in the performing arts world, but also in the facilitation and healing and consciousness coaching world, is I've always attracted the master level the teachers and the master level practitioners, those are the people that have always come to me, even when I was like a rank beginner. And I'm like, what the hell do I do with this? I am not qualified. And yet there is something there. So it's being called out. And there's a certain amount of some combination of foolishness and courage, maybe, but the support of a lot of those around me and a lot of years of experience that have provided little incremental steps to help me develop the courage and the foundation. You know, that you could say that, you know, breakthroughs happen overnight, but that overnight is built on years of these little incremental changes that we develop when we show up and when we do stuff, or sometimes when we hide from it and we learn something. And it's finally getting to the point where it's built up enough to kind of get me up above the waterline. And I recognize that, you know, the meanness is, you know, there's a certain amount of this individual that is Lawrence that is kind of hosting this process to a certain degree, or at least, you know, keeping its head off the rocks. But it is coming through me as me, and it's shifting and changing. So there's an interesting balance of being true to it and at the same time being true to me, however that I understand that in the moment. And, you know, as you say, it's a transmission. A lot of people don't need the words. They don't need the concepts. They don't need the reasons. They just feel it and they know. But I need to be able to go through the process of determining those, of unearthing them and articulating them and offering them up as a gem, because that's part of what creates. You know, regardless of whether anybody uses them or not, I need to be able to generate them for my own process.
I so love that, Lawrence. One of the ways that I experience it is in my writing. Poetry is a thing for me. I definitely relate to the notion of sometimes I feel like I am writing the words, and quite often I feel like the words are actually writing me. There is something that's coming through. Mm-hmm. So yay for that. And I am just moved again. I suppose this is a thread and theme in our friendship and colleagueship along the way here. I'm just moved by the creative spark. That doesn't even feel like the right language, but whatever. Creative spark, creative energy, creative orientation, energetic creative orientation. That gets exciting to me. It makes me feel very alive. And I suppose it's one of the, maybe it's the transformational energies or transmission energies that I've known a little bit about and want to be very deliberate about also in the next chapters that are me, or, you know, the continuing book that is me. Lawrence, I love this question that speaks to the true to part, like true to self, true to values, true to energy being felt. When you think of your body of life, your body of work that is your life, do you recognize something in the Lawrence can't not do category? Like, no matter what, I can't not blank.
Yep. And it sparked a departure from the architecture world for me. I was doing very well as an owner's rep and consultant in the architecture world. Somebody offered me the Guggenheim in Abu Dhabi, working with Frank Gehry's office. And I said no, and I walked away. Because I discovered what I can't not do is help people grow into their higher expression of themselves. I can't not do it. And it got to be a bit of a liability in the construction industry and in the architecture world, because it is so organized around, it's so reductive and so competitive and organized around somebody winning and everyone else losing. It's just inherent in the system and the model. It's a very old, you know, it goes back at least a couple hundred years. And it's changing reluctantly, but I found a much better place for myself, you know, working directly, you know, screw the building and just work directly with people, because that way I can be more authentically who I am and be in alignment with that impulse that I can't repress. And I've tried and I've made myself sick. Because if you aren't going to be who you are, your being will tell you that you're making a bad choice, unless you do it for educational purposes.
That is a big piece of life learning and living right there. Oof, that I'm relating to.
Yeah. And the poison can be the medicine.
Yeah.
I'm having this flavor of some of your writing in your books of poetry, in particular the one before last. I don't remember, the name is escaping me at the moment.
But, Cadence of Despair.
Cadence of Despair. There you go. The poison is the medicine.
Mm.
The revelation I felt,
yeah,
through that book was, yeah, a testament to that.
I'm moved by that, and thank you for that. Maybe we'll tuck it in for today.
Okay.
And Lawrence, if people want to find you, how do they do so? Was there a recommendation you have?
The recommendation I have is go to lawrencekampf.com. Maybe we can put a little link in the posting here. Yeah. And Fieldwork is the name of the new initiative. It's the culmination of the decade's work for us who are working in the field.
Oh.
The greater living field. And that will be live, ideally tomorrow, probably late.
Yeah.
And I'm offering a couple of free explorations for people to come in and dip a toe and take a taste of it and see if it has the feeling or the information that they need to spark something in them. And then I'm offering two seasons of programs, a spring and a fall season. Each one will be a series of sessions organized along an arc, a narrative arc of how transformation works and how we can deepen our practice and our capacities at a crucial time in the world. And it has a year-round community, so we can stay in touch and we can continue to explore together. You will, of course, get an invitation.
I'm loving all of that. You are speaking some very potent and even tender things into my heart right now. I think I'm celebrating the love of you doing all of the doing and all of the being that's needed to create such offerings. And I get to know you a little bit in this way that means you're not just a website, and I get to know you as a human this way. So there's a part of me that's just excited about all of that and feeling really that kind of edge in myself too right now, actually, Lawrence. It's, I feel myself in a needed new creative mode. And some of that is scary as hell. And some of that is super exciting. So, but just hearing you speak to the point in time that arrives at a day before release and launch and sharing, and I'm just cheering for you. And I do suspect you and I have got a few more chapters in us to run together or play together, or, and as I've said, be guided by also. I think there's something about coming into your guidance. I'm really grateful for today. Thank you.
Thank you, so am I. Oh gosh. Wow. Such a treat. Especially at this particular time, I will make good use of the blessing of the Tennyson.
There we go.
As I move forward today.
I'm going to press pause on our recording so that you and I can have a proper goodbye. And then just so you know, I'm going to come back and unpause it. And I do like a little post-reflection, offer my own thoughts about, wow, wasn't that something? So that's going to be coming too.
Oh, fantastic.
All right. Thanks, Lawrence. Okay, so I'm back now. It's just me, Tennyson. I've said the proper goodbye and appreciation with Lawrence in the off-screen way, off-mic way. The first thing I said in the off-mic way was, holy shit, with a completely appreciative energy with Lawrence. He's a man that I really love. Love hearing about what he's creating and has been creating. And I have such a deep appreciation for Lawrence in a brothering way, in a co-humaning way, and also in guiding. There's been some times when I know I've offered a little bit of guidance or something in that direction with him. And he is one that I feel an instinct to be with also. There's a lot of love in there. And maybe as it goes back to some of the things that we just mentioned in the recording, there is a shared love of the unseen. And maybe it's important to just name the love in there. Like I rarely feel like I'm getting into too heady of a space with Lawrence. I feel so often that there's such a natural belly and heart alignment. And if I let myself translate that into equally important, if not more important, parts of my own brain, my own thinking, my gosh, there's some good things that are happening there. So there were lots of words and lots of phrases. I'll summarize some of that in show notes. But Lawrence and I have had a continued periodic connection, often primarily on Zoom, and often characterized by having a cup of tea together. It's super good. I know when I set that up with him, this call, this recording, I named some things as is part of this little podcast. Like, we're not going to get to all the good stuff. We're going to leave some good things out. And I know that there's some of that. I'm glad not to obligate to the everything, but boy, just to be in and touch some of that. Some of that deep and soulful and heartfelt connection with one another. So I could gush on a bunch more, but there's a few little thoughts about Lawrence. I'm glad to know him as a human on the planet. Thanks, people, for listening to today's episode of the Human to Human podcast. And let's see. Thanks again, Yep, for joining. As additional information and resources, I write my daily blog, Human to Human, which is available on my website at tennisonwolf.com. I'm glad to be continuing in work that is leadership development, soul growing, just becoming good humans with one another, and welcome, continued connection, or maybe even some new explorations. If you are liking and hearing, or liking something that you hear here and want to, at minimum, have a cup of tea around it, I welcome that kind of connection. It's great to be in a place of learning and connecting and discovering. Thanks for joining.